Hello, everybody. My name is Joe Brickner. I'm the former head basketball coach at Benedictine College. I want to take this podcast and dedicate it to a very good friend of mine who passed away just this week. Normally, I interview coaches on the podcast, and we have about four sessions, each 20, 25 minutes long. And one of the guests that I had planned to have on was a man by the name of Matthew Chick Downing. Now, unfortunately, Chick Hart gave out on him this week and passed away. And it was a difficult time for a lot of people because Chick was something special. Today, I'd just like to talk a little bit about Chick and what a great person he was, caring, loving, great teacher, very intelligent. Now you'll see most of the things that are going to be published about Chick are his athletic records. You know, he was All-State in high school, won two state basketball championships as a player, won four state championships as a coach. He was inducted into five different halls of fame. He's a three-time coach of the year in Kansas. He's a two-time All-American and a teammate of mine at St. Benedict's back in the day. And he's our all-time leading scorer, over 2,000 points, a great rebounder. And I'll talk a little bit about that later, but I don't want to concentrate on those things in this podcast. He's obviously a great player, great coach. But I want to talk a little bit about him as a teammate, as a coach, a co-coach. I had him as an assistant for a couple of years. I want to talk to him, or talked about him as a dad, a granddad, a great granddad. And as a friend, Chick was 6'7". When he played, probably 225 to 230. I called him smooth. I mean, he could do anything. He had an inside game. He had an outside game. He jumped just high enough as ever he needed in order to get a rebound. He could sky. But, you know, he didn't put out more energy than he really had to. But he got his boards. He had 1 year, he averaged 13 and a half rebounds. I think he's second on the all-time leading list of rebounders at our school. He was an adequate defender. He wasn't a great defender. He could block shots, but Chick, he kind of, things came very easy to Chick athletically. And so sometimes on the defensive end, he might give a little, but when we needed him to be there, he was. Chick grew up in Atchison, Kansas. Now, you got to know Atchison. I love the people there. It was a great little town to go to school in. It was a good town to come back to and coach. But Atchison has a racial history that the people that live there know. There's a street in Atchison called Division, and it was called Division for a purpose. On the north side of Division, the black people lived, and on the south side of Division, the white people lived. And that went on for years. It was in, when Chick was in high school, in fact, there was a real bad black-white issue at the high school. They had to call in the attorney general. The actual attorney general of Kansas came to Atchison High School. And this was back in the mid-60s. So there's a lot of racial tension at that time. Chick lived through that. First time that I saw Chick play, in fact, I was a freshman at St. Benedict's. And we had a Friday night off, and we decided we'd go over and watch Atchison High play because they had a kid over there that was a junior and that they said was really good. He ended up being All-State and then won state championship that year. But when we went to watch him play, he was good. He was really good. But when you looked at him, he was all arms and legs. I mean, he was really long, and you could tell athletic. And then I kind of lost track of Chick. You know, you don't pay a lot of attention to the high school sports when you're at the college, trying to concentrate on books and basketball and gals every once in a while. But next time that I saw Chick in person was when he came on a recruiting visit. Now, Chick was an All-American high school basketball player. Could have gone anywhere. He was not only a great basketball player, he was a great football player. He was a great baseball player. He had opportunities to play football at Nebraska. Some of the baseball teams were interested in him coming out of high school and playing baseball for him. In fact, when he graduated from college, he got a letter from the Cowboys and the Philadelphia franchise. The Phillies wanted him to take a look at baseball. He was drafted by the Knicks, and I'll tell you a little bit about that story a little bit later. But when I saw him on his recruiting trip, he came in, and you know, as we always did on Saturday afternoon, the recruits would come in and we'd play. Back then, we didn't play full court. It was really strange. We only played half court on pickup games. We played half court that day, and I mean, Chick was just, he was there. He was already at the college level. He was good. So after it was all over, he went out and did the tours and that type of thing. He had some of our star players talk to him and try to convince him that Benedictine, well, St. Benedict's at the time, was the right place for him to be, et cetera, et cetera. And when he was finished, I happened to be around, and at the time I had a 50cc Yamaha motorcycle. Now, I was a sophomore, and you couldn't have a car at school until you were a junior. So I ended up, I don't know how I did this, because my parents didn't have any money, but somehow my dad came up with this little motorcycle and brought it up to me on parents' weekend my sophomore year. So I had it. I was too cold to ride it until the spring. That's when Chick came to visit. So I was out riding that thing periodically. So I talked to Chick and I said, "Hey, do you have a way home?" And he says, "No, not really." And I says, "Well, I'll give you a ride." Well, you can imagine what that looked like. This 50cc Yamaha is just a tiny little bike. And here I am on it. And then you see this 6'7", 215-pound guy on the back of it holding on to me. And I don't know how the bike ever got us there, because it's probably way too much weight for that bike. But we eventually, and he only lived a few blocks away. It wasn't like a big deal, but I dropped him off at his house, and that was the start of our friendship. I mean, from then on, we were friends. He ended up signing with us, which was great. So he came in, and we knew he was going to be a starter. He was no doubt going to be a star for St. Benedict's. And we'd been used to having some very, very good players. We had a guy by the name of Darryl Jones who had played, I'd played 2 years with him, and he was a four-time All-American for us. And he was drafted by the Cincinnati Royals and ended up being the last guy cut from them, unfortunately for him. But Darryl was just a great athlete, similar in size to Chick. So Darryl was graduating. Chick comes in as a freshman. That was a pretty good replacement. First game that we played was an away game. We played at Omaha University, and Chick didn't start. We had a Hall of Fame coach by the name of Ralph Nolan, And I don't know if he had planned to do this or not, but he just decided not to start Chick in that very first game. And Omaha had a pretty good team. We were up there, and we had a small lead at halftime. Second half, it got even tighter, and Chick came in. And, I mean, he ended up, I think, that night with 13 points, but he hit some big buckets for us, and we ended up beating Omaha on their court. Well, he started every game after that in his entire career. You just tell that he had what it took. And when it came down to needing something, either offensively or a block shot, you know, he had it. He was one of those players that could make plays. The early season game that year against Washburn University out of Topeka was huge. Washburn, the year before, had knocked us out of the tournament, out of the playoffs in Kansas. They beat us, I think, 55-53. And we had on that team four starters and the sixth man from the team from the year before that won the national tournament. So it wasn't like Washburn was coming in playing a team that didn't have a lot of talent or whatever. We had great players. Washburn beats us 55-53, crushed us. I mean, it was so hard not to go back to the tournament after winning it my freshman year and not even getting back there as a sophomore. So early in the season, my junior year, we're playing Washburn. They've got their whole team back, and they had won a game or two the year before in the national tournament. So you knew they were going to be really, really good. And we had lost five very, very good seniors, stars. And the only guys that had any starting experience my junior year was myself. I'd start about half the games as a sophomore. And there was a guy that was a freshman the year before who started about half the games. We had an injury to one of the forwards, the senior forward. And so he stepped into that slot, and I stepped into the point guard position. And they moved one of the guards to our sixth man. And that was Nolan's rotation. Worked out pretty good. We won 11 in a row right after that. But now we're basically me and Jimmy Buford was the only other guy that had starting experience. So we're playing against Washburn at our place. And Washburn comes in. They just knew they were going to beat us on our home court. Nobody ever did, but they knew they were going to beat us on our home court because we had a bunch of rookies, basically. Well, our rookies ended up playing really well. Chick went for 18 points and 19 rebounds. And we beat Washburn that night by 6 or 8. Ended up starting the year 6-1. Ended up being the number one ranked team in Kansas, which was important because if you were in the top four, there were 24 schools in Kansas. If you're in the top four, then you got to go to the playoffs. And from those playoffs, then the winner of the playoffs went to the national tournament. without Chick there, you know, we don't touch Washburn. And it was just, he could rise to the occasion. He could play. The part about being a teammate, I mean, he's so good-natured. And he had intimidated some people. It was funny. You could stand back and just watch him. And I mean, he was a big man. He had quite a presence about him. But we used to, every day after practice, Chick, myself, and another player from Ohio, a good friend, Scott Carlin. Scotty was a year behind me, and he was a great player from Ohio. And so the three of us would have a free throw shooting contest every day after practice. You'd shoot 25 free throws, each of us. And whoever won had a band that they'd wear around their ankle the next day that said champ. whoever came in third had to wear a band around their ankle that said chump. So we had the champ and chump every night after practice. And if you didn't hit 23 or 24 free throws, chances are you're going to be the chump. I mean, that's how good of a free throw shooter Chick was, which doesn't happen a lot of times for big guys. I mean, guards, we can shoot free throws, but big guys sometimes can't. Not Chick. He could lace them. And it came in handy because my junior year, we went to the playoffs. And like I said, we ended up being seeded number one. And we knew we were going to play Washburn. They were seeded number two. We were going to play them in the finals. We knew that. So we're playing a team called Friends University out of Wichita. And we were pretty immature, I think, as a team, and that we overlooked Friends. They came from a conference that wasn't as good as the competition that we had played. So we overlooked them. We end up losing in overtime to Friends. Don't even get a chance to play Washburn. Well, the next year we go into the tournament and Friends has their whole team back. And I mean, they had some good kids. I mean, they had three black kids from Wichita that decided to stay in Wichita and go to Friends University, and they could play. I mean, and so we knew that. We knew we'd played them the year before. Sure enough, we draw them to play them in the first round again. And sure enough, we go overtime. And I'm thinking, this can't happen. You know, we haven't been to the Nationals since my freshman year. We have to be able to go back. We have to. And so we go into overtime, and they make the first basket. So now they're up 2 points in overtime. And I was just, I don't know, crazy, I guess. But I came down and took a shot you should never take. And I'm sure Coach Nolan was on the sideline going, no, no, no. Yeah. Because I hit one, it had to be 23, 25 feet out, you know, and just come across half court and shot it and bang, hit it. So they come down and we hold them. We go back down, go into Chick, he scores. And as it wore down towards the end of the overtime, they were fouling us and they were fouling Chick. Money. He hit the free throws for us and put us into the finals. And then in the finals of the district, we won that. We beat St. Mary's University and earned our way back to the national tournament. So the free throw shooting that the champ chump ended up paying off quite nicely for us, got us back to the Nationals. Everything you read about Chick is what a great athlete he was, and he was. The first time I experienced him outside of basketball was after our senior year. Now, my senior year was his sophomore year. We put together an off-campus team to play in the intramural softball, slow pitch softball. And I was off campus because I was married, and Chick was off campus because he had been married since he was a freshman. Got married before he came to college his freshman year. He had a little boy. And then one of our other starters on our team was another senior who had just gotten married too. So we had three senior starters on our basketball team. Well, two of us decided to play softball. Chick was one of them and I was the other. And so we're on this off-campus softball team. And you have to understand how our campus is designed. We had up on the top of the hill was what we called Science Hall. It was a futuristic type looking building. It was round and sat up on the top of a hill. And leading up to that were these pine trees. And so right in front of those pine trees were softball diamonds. And, you know, if you could get one over somebody's head, it could roll up to the base of a pine tree. You know, and you probably get a home run out of it, unless you're really slow. So first game we're playing, they throw a pitch to Chick. He jacks this ball over the pine trees. We're going, what? Nobody can hit a ball that far. Unbelievable. And that's just the way it was. I mean, from then on, they kept walking Chick, because I knew if we ever got a pitch, he was going to jack it so far nobody could go get it. I saw him later, and if you know Chick at all, you know that he made some awfully good money playing professionally at this slow pitch level. I went to watch him. I was living in Topeka at the time, and he was playing for a team, and who knows from where. I mean, he played for teams out of Ohio and Florida and California, and, you know, wherever he got the best contract. But he was playing on a team that came into play in Topeka, and he played at Gage Park. Gage Park has a lot of softball diamonds, and, you know, it's, I don't know, distances all that well, but it's probably 210, 230. To knock one out, maybe 250, I don't know. But he gets up to bat. Now, this is absolutely amazing. When I played slow pitch softball, which I played some of that after I got out of college, you know, in the various leagues with Southwestern Bells League and all that type of thing. But, you know, they'd throw the high looping pitch, and, you know, some guys could get a hold of it and some guys couldn't. Well, I'm watching these professional softball players play. They didn't throw the high pitch. They threw it as low of an arc as they could that was still legal. And the reason was they didn't want these guys to get under the ball and hit it out, because you'd have 10, 12, 15 straight home runs. I mean, it was amazing how all these guys could hit. So they'd throw it straight. Well, Chick would get up there, and he's left-handed batter. Get up there, and he just laid the bat on his shoulder, and he'd watch the first pitch come through, strike one. Watch the second pitch come through, strike two. Okay, watch the third one, bang, out of here. And he did that. And the first one that I watched him hit, he not only cleared the fence, he cleared the street, which was about at least 50 feet behind that. I mean, it was unbelievable. And I thought, that's amazing. Second time he gets up to bat, exactly the same thing. He watches the first two pitches go by, and then third one, jank, gone, over the street again. These guys are in a totally different league than I had ever even seen. But that's how good he was at softball. He was good enough in basketball to be drafted by the Knicks. And I never knew the whole story on why he didn't stay. He was drafted by them, and it was they drafted him the year they lost to the Lakers in the NBA championship. I think they lost 4-1. So they had their whole team back again. You know, it's Walt Frazier and Willis Reed, Earl Monroe, Bill Bradley, Dave DeBuscher. I mean, they had a heck of a team. But DeBuscher and Bradley were getting up there in years, especially DeBuscher. He was 32, and not too many guys played beyond that age. And he had decided that he probably had one more year. And Bradley, as you know, he ended up being a senator, U.S. senator. He wanted to move on to something more than basketball. He was a great player. He was 29 years old. And so he's basically 30, going on 30, but still could play. And he was good. But they knew they were going to lose their starting forward. So Chick goes in, and the Knicks had their whole team back from the team that had lost in the championship. And they had two first-round picks. And they picked Henry Bibby out of UCLA. And they picked Tom Ryker out of, I think it was North Carolina State. And back then they signed no-cut contracts with their rookies, their first-round picks. So those two guys had the squad made. Well, the Knicks had everybody else back, so they weren't going to have room for a couple of guys from the year before. Well, Chick goes in and has a good preseason with them. So they want him to stay on the East Coast and play in, trying to think what the name of the league, I think they called it the Eastern League back then, but it was the developmental league. Anybody that didn't make and got cut from the NBA would go to this. Now there's, back then there was only like 12 or 14 NBA teams. So you can imagine how good the players were in this Eastern League. So they asked Chick to stick around, and they were going to give him $18,000 to stay and play just in the Eastern League. Now, to put things in perspective, 2 years earlier, when I graduated from college, I got a great offer from Southwestern Bell. And they offered me $10,000 a year. And here Chick comes back 2 years later, and he gets double that, basically, if he'll play in the Eastern League. Chick said, no, I'm going home. And I never quite understood why that was. So about a year and a half ago, I'd called Chick, and I didn't get up to Atchison too much anymore after I had stopped teaching and coaching up there. So I called him and I said, hey, we need to go to lunch. Let me take you to lunch and let's just visit and catch up. So I did. And we go in and talk. And I said, you know, Chick, I always wanted to ask you this, and I never have. Why did you leave the Knicks? Why didn't you stay? Because I had heard that Red Holtzman, their coach, had called our coach, Tom Caldwell, and asked him to beg you to come back. And Caldwell said he'd try, but he didn't go back. Why didn't you do that? I mean, you could have been, the next year, DeBuscher and Bradley were both retiring. You'd have stepped into their lineup. And he said, you know, it was, number one, it was a different lifestyle, and it was the East Coast. He said that was a lot different than the Midwest. And he said, surely his wife at this time had at least three kids, maybe even more. he said, surely, just said, I'm not going, period. I don't want to go. I'm not going to live there. And he said, if Shirley wasn't coming, I wasn't coming. He said, so I came back, and after that, he became the coach at Atchison High School and just had that great career there as a coach. So, I mean, what an athlete. He could have possibly played professionally in three different sports. He and I kind of stayed close over the years, partly because our sons were about the same age. His oldest was Cougar, and Cougar was a year ahead of my oldest, Alex. And then he had another son, Parr, who was a year younger than Alex. And I had a son, Scott, a year younger than Parr. So they kind of played against each other growing up somewhat. But then when they got to high school, obviously the kids for Chick played for him for Atchison High, and my two played at Topeka Hayden, which was a Catholic school. And either Atchison High or Hayden won the state championship 5 years in a row. Atchison won three of them and Hayden won two. It was a huge rivalry, absolutely huge rivalry. But to show you the heart of this guy, this coach, you know, and I'm not in coaching now, I'm still working in business and everything. So Hayden's going to play Atchison High, and it's my son Scott's junior year. So Cougar's gone, Alex is gone out of high school, but Scott's a junior and Parr is a senior. Huge game, huge game. Place is packed. And we're in the second half, and it's just, you know, back and forth and back and forth. A great high school basketball game. And unfortunately, somewhere in between the third and fourth quarter, my son gets injured, and he's laying on the floor. And you can tell he's hurt. First guy to Scott on the floor is Chick. He beat our coach. He beat our trainer. He beat everybody else. Chick was on the floor checking Scott out, making sure that he wasn't seriously injured. And amazing, amazing. But he cared. And he cared about his kids. I mean, he loved his kids at Atchison, Ohio. One year, he started 5 Downings. I don't know how they all related to him. They weren't all his sons, but they all could have been. He's 5 Downings started. I think it's probably the only time in the history of basketball that, you know, everybody with the same last name and all related started a high school basketball game. But Chick loved his kids, and he was tough. I mean, he made him toe the line, but they knew that he cared. And he was just a hell of a coach and a heck of a person. He retired from coaching and started working for the state, which was a good thing, which continued his ability to be able to get a pension and that type of thing once he did retire. But after he retired, from basketball, I ended up being appointed head coach at Benedictine. And for me, I had convinced the assistant coach from the year before to stay on as my assistant. It was my first real coaching job where I'd sat on the bench and didn't play. And I needed somebody that knew what was going on, you know, knew the ins and outs, not only of the game itself, but I needed somebody that could figure out, you know, where the bleachers were, you name it. And so I convinced the guy to stay on. Well, 2 weeks before season started for first practice, he resigned and went into business. So I'm sitting there 2 weeks away from my very first practice as a head college basketball coach with no assistant. So I called Chick. I begged him. I said, I need you, Chick. I need for you to be my assistant. He says, nope. He says, I won't do it. He says, I'm not coaching up at Benedict, and I'm just not going to do that. And I said, oh, you have to help me here. He goes, nope. And I said, you know, Chick, I've only got $6,000 for an assistant coach, but you know, maybe that can help you. And he said, I don't think so. And I kept going after him, going, and finally I convinced him that, yeah, I'll do it. So for $6,000, he kept his regular full-time job, you know, understanding that he'd missed some practices when we had him in the afternoons, and he'd missed road trips that were further away and put him back home too late at night and things like that. But he became my assistant coach. Interestingly, and this, you got to know Chick, he came to me about 3 days after practice starts, and he says, hey, you think maybe I could get a $3,000 advance on that salary? And I start laughing. So I'll see what I can do. So talk to the administration, and we got him his $3,000 advance. And you know what? Not one penny of that was kept by Chick. You know, anytime he had money, it would kind of went straight through him to his kids or to his grandkids. That's just the way he was. So Chick came on board, and we had a really good agreement. I told him, you coach the big guys, I'll coach the guards. And not only, you know, are you going to work with them on stations and things like that in practice, but during games, Chick, I want you substituting for the big guys, and I'll substitute for the guards. Now, you think that's kind of a strange arrangement, but, you know, we were on the same page. I trusted him. And he trusted me, and it worked out. We took a team that was 0-18 in the league, went 9-9 with the same players, and ended up in the playoffs. We had to go down after we won the first round. We had to go down and play the second place team on their court, and we knocked them off. Unfortunately, we had to play the third place team on their court the next round, and we didn't win that one, but he did a great job. The second year he was with me as assistant coach, he wasn't well. He had diabetes, and I don't think he was taking his medicine like he was supposed to be taking it. And so he wasn't well, and he decided he could go on some of this road trips with us. And we went up and played Northwest Missouri State. After the game was over, we came down the locker room, and Chick is down literally laying on one of the benches, and we couldn't wake him up. It was really strange. And I should have known better, but I never thought about his blood sugar was so low. So we got home, and fortunately, his girlfriend was picking him up, and she took him straight to the hospital. And when they took his blood sugar, they found out it was a 12. Now, your blood sugar is normally 80 to 120. You go down to a 12 and you're in a coma. Somehow he wasn't. And they got his blood sugar back up, and he recovered. But the disease was just terrible. It ended up taking a lot of his eyesight, his teeth. He lost both legs from the knees down. It was just devastating when you think about what a great body he had and how that disease came in and just destroyed it. But, you know, he never complained. Even when we had lunch a year and a half ago, you know, he's without his legs. And we were talking about that a little bit. And he says, you know, it's kind of fun in a way. He says, I love to get in the car, and I'll get in the passenger seat. And he said, I take off my legs. He says, it drives my grandkids nuts. And I'm going, you got to be kidding. No. Oh, that's what he do. So, you know, the other thing I'd just like to say is, Chick always called me coach, you know, after I got the job up there. And what a sign of respect. It was amazing because he was a coach. I was a wannabe, and he was a coach. But I never talked to him where he'd call me Joe. He always did before I was a coach, but once I became the head coach, he always coach, you know. And he meant it. He did. It was that respect that he had for coaches. And I'm sure our friendship had something to do with it too, but he was always there for support. You know, I after the second year that he was with me, his health just wasn't good enough for him to continue coaching with us. So unfortunately, I didn't have Chick around anymore for the day-to-day stuff, but, you know, we'd stay in touch, and he'd come to all the games, home games, and he'd sit there, and I just loved looking across the court because he always sat right, excuse me, he always sat right across the court from where we were, our bench was. And you could see the dad part of it and the granddad part of it in Chick. I don't know how many kids, little kids, that would just always be running over to him, jumping up on his lap, you know, always wanting to be around Chick. And he loved it. He absolutely loved children. And he was so good with them, just so good with them. You know, I always look at people and, you know, you make decisions about what type of people they are sometimes. Sometimes it's fair, sometimes it's not. But one way I measure people are, how do they treat little kids? You know, how are they with little kids? You know, are they gentle? Are they loving? And he was, you know, and that told me this man's got a great heart. And the kids weren't necessarily his grandkids, you know, just little kids. He loved them. And he's such a great mentor, a great teacher. He's a great friend. Love it, Chick. Hope to see you in heaven, buddy.